right, Todd and Gabe here from Bimmer File and the Bimmercast. We are in, what are we in?
This is an X6 hybrid. This is the X6 active hybrid, as they call it.
And I can't get past the absolutely gorgeous white leather interior here.
It's white leather with a little bit of blue stitching. We all started out hating the X6, the idea of the X6. And at this point, I know Michael's driven the X6M. I've had an extensive review of the X6 itself. We're going to be driving this car. It's actually kind of an endearing beast, if you will. It still makes no sense, but you know what? A 6 Series doesn't make a lot of sense either. it's more on that later. But it's providing a nice little studio for us.
It is, and we've got some great audio coming up. We got a great interview with Martin.
Yeah, and Martin does not do interviews very often, so it was a real pleasure to, and you'll hear very shortly some of the stuff we talk about. But we challenged him a little bit on a few things, and he certainly was up to the challenge, so to speak. But I think in general, you know, this show for BMW is all about the active E1 series. It's going to be a similar product to the Mini E in that it's going to be leased, and it is really all about being a field study, so to speak, for the BMW group and the forthcoming Project I cars. So, you know, it's really all about efficient dynamics in BMW speak. If you look around, there's not a single M car here.
Not an M car, and not the new 5 like everybody thought.
So another car that we do see here for the first time is the 135i with the N55 single turbo twin scroll and DCT. Now, you may notice the photos have the old style push-pull paddles, which most of us hate, except for Michael for some reason. I figured that out. The actual production car will have the pull-pull, which left goes down, right goes up. So it's a little bit more like the M style. Actually, it is like the M style. So that is a debut, a very quiet debut. Of course, the Z435IS is here. That's a debut as well. We've got the 740, which is a debut for the U.S. market, and the 5... the 5 Series GT Gran Turismo with the 3-liter, the N55 again, the 3-liter single turbo twin scroll. So that is a debut for the U.S. market. Lots of little debuts here. We're flanked on either side by more efficient dynamics cars. We have the 7 Series active hybrid and the X5 35D. All about efficiency, but still an exciting show, some very interesting stuff, and interesting conversation coming up.
Yep, got some great stuff coming up, so stay tuned here at Bimmer File, and about it for now.
Yeah, that is about it. We're going to be back with a little bit more, maybe a wrap-up, but again, great show. Stay tuned.
Todd and Gabe here for Bimmer File, the Bimmer File podcast, and we are here in the BMW section, Gabe, and we are standing here with Martin Berkman, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And Martin, you've got quite a history with BMW, right, as we know.
Yeah, I'm with the company now for, I started counting after 20 years, so let's just face it to say it's 20 years. I'm in the United States for 9 years. I used to work in product planning in the last 9 years. 5 Series, Z4, Z8, M. And now I head the product planning and strategy department. I also oversee the racing program that we have here in the States.
Great. So the Ray Hall Letterman team, obviously you're very, very involved in. Any product decision made for the United States, you're very involved in as well. And then, of course, the M brand.
Well, what I do is I oversee all the product planning and strategy. And that goes, if you think of it in time horizon, from, let's say, 5 or 6 years out. So everything that hits the market 2015, 16 to model year planning. So what do we do for model year 11? And so, and everything in between is basically my responsibility, including the all the individual series that we have from 1 all the way to 7, the X models, the Z's, and the M brand.
My question is how many hours in a day do you actually need to make to do all that?
I use the traditional 24, and when that's not enough, I use the night. You know, that's the old saying.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can't imagine. Well, I wanted to actually start the conversation talking about the M brand. We're here. We've got the Z4. IS under the covers here, and that's not necessarily an M car, but there's a lot of it seems like M technology to it. Why is that a U.S. only model? Is that something that was brought in to fill a niche for the U.S.?
That is not a U.S. only okay. model. So the IS layer is something that has sort of a tradition, if you think back all the way into I think the 80s, even with the E30s. The S is the last letter of the nomenclature we used to designate sport models, body models. What you have is a car that takes the performance envelope of the underlying car, takes it a notch up without going all the way in terms of technology depth and price to the level of an M car. Mm-hmm. So this is a very fun car. It actually heads on competition. It also ends with an S, if you think of it. Mm-hmm. Gives you more sensory feedback, a bit edgier performance than the great 35i. And I think it will be a great car that fits right into where the market is. Mm-hmm. But at this stage, there are no plans for a roadster version of an M product.
Okay. All right. That's actually that is my next question. One of the things that the M division brought out last year was the X5 and the X6 M's, and a lot of enthusiasts like the readers of our site and a lot of other just enthusiasts in general were a little concerned about that being maybe M's first foray into a wider consumer group. I mean, you've got an automatic, you've got all-wheel drive, and you've got a 5,000-pound vehicle with the M badge. And we all know they still drive well. There's M characteristics there. But what can you say to answer those critics?
Well, this is a great question. I'd love to debate this question. So I think what people need to understand is we're not just a manufacturer of vehicles. We're also an engineering company. And when I listen to these enthusiasts, a lot of them say, please bring the E30 back. The E30 was a great car in its time, but what has made BMW and M in particular, I think, a great company is that we continue to push the envelope. The X5 and the X6 M were a first in many aspects, but one thing I think if you think about M competence and BMW competence, you come back to motors. Mm-hmm. If you can ask everyone in the industry, it's absolutely inevitable that we go forced induction. If in order to fulfill stringent GHG, greenhouse gas, CO2 requirements, you need to burn these engines at least partly lean. You need to have surplus of air, and direct injection, forced direct injection is the answer to that. Now, we have for 30 years religiously followed a high rev naturally aspirated concept, but we needed to make this paradigm shift. For us to do this with a product that's maybe not quite in the core of the brand. We think of the brand as a universe and the various products as maybe the stars in that universe. And clearly the X5 and the X6 M products are not in the core of the M brand. But for us to bring these products and have a platform to pioneer forced induction technology for the first time in M is actually a very fortunate circumstance. Now, that means all nothing if the product doesn't deliver. We have a clear requirement of what M products are. They're a lot about linear input response, and they're a lot about driver control. That is, the key fundamentals of an M product. That's not limited to 2,000, 3,000, or 5,000 pounds, the number of wheels driven, or the engine concept. It's really the ultimate customer benefit that we want to achieve. And the X5 and the X6 M were no exception. I think it's great to see the passion of our fans that bemoan the departure from traditional technology, but for us as a company to stay relevant, as a brand to stay relevant, we have to embark into the future. And I think the X5 and the X6 M are great testimonials to that. And we will see more forced induction M cars coming, mm-hmm. for sure.
So one of the first for the X5 and X6, if you don't count the E36 for the US market, is an automatic transmission. And that's something that a lot of people have been talking about with the Z4 35IS as well, DCT only. Are we starting to see the phasing out of manual transmissions in M cars?
I don't think you see the phasing out of the manual transmission in M cars. What you see is a diminishing demand for manual transmissions. We at BMW are, especially in the North American market, I think very thoroughbred enthusiasts and enjoy the interaction with the machine. And the manual transmission with a third pedal is an element of interaction that you start to lose when you have an automated gearbox. If that's an automatic, if that's a double clutch, sequential, it doesn't really matter. There is no question that the performance level that you can achieve with an automated gearbox is higher. So on the performance side, that's a clear asset. The customers seem to stray away from manual transmissions. It's only a very, very small group of enthusiasts that remain. Now for us as a business, it becomes decisive to see if, depending on the volume of a vehicle, the market is just big enough to develop it. Because in order to develop a convincing manual transmission, you need to spend a lot of money. And if the majority of your customers, you talk about 3 out of 4 M3 customers, for example, go the other direction, then you have to take an entrepreneurial decision. And with the G4, it is a smaller market, it's a niche model, and we have taken the decision to do the 7-speed only.
And you know, obviously we've got, there's a lot of rumors out there of other IS models, notably on Bimmerfile. Is it logical for us to assume that we'll see a similar choice there, because again, it is a niche market?
I think it would be a foregone conclusion. We look at this really market by market and segment by segment. If you compare, say, this open top car with other open top cars we have in our range, this is a much smaller volume base than our other convertibles. So as you start to sub-segment, you come to a critical mass where you have to just decide, is it worth the effort? Is it a business proposition or isn't it? But we do like manual transmissions. If our customers do too and vote with their check boxes on their spec sheets and continue to demand these transmissions, we will continue to supply them. Once the trend goes, you know, in one direction and the demand dies down, we will not offer something that there's no demand for, but we like them. Yeah. Everyone knows that I personally drive a manual transmission. It's usually my preferred choice.
You have a Z4 M Coupe, is that? And that's what I've heard. And that actually, I've written about that on Bimmerfile. So that's my favorite all-time M car, even going back to the E30 M3. So kudos, good choice, as I'm sure you know. So I think that you know, this new model, this new IS model is pretty exciting. DCT manual doesn't really matter. But I heard something from you a little earlier, and it was very clear that because of this, and I think because of, I'm also assuming, just the need of the market, we will not see an M Roadster for this generation. Is that unequivocally a yes? We will not see that.
Well, we want to be always very careful with words like ever and never, right? Because that's such a dumb, yeah, long period of time. Right now, there's no plan to make an M product out of the E89, of this Roadster.
Fair enough. Now, one of the things that has been absolutely blowing our side up, blowing a lot of their sites up, is this rumor of a 1-series M product. And I know that you can't go on record and talk about that, I'm sure. But it has been talked about by Dr. Kai Segler, in that it seemingly has been approved. They're going forward with it. There's some plans underway. Is that a product that you could see coming to the US market?
As you know, the US is the strongest M market. That's something that many people don't know. Of course, your readers do. But it's a bit counterintuitive. You have 65 miles, 75 miles speed limits, one of the more rigidly limited markets. Nonetheless, you have a huge amount of followers, a very affectionate attitude towards the car to this day, which is very good, because we are passionate about our product as well. So there's a good match. So when we do an M product or something that has performance on its badge, you can pretty safely assume that the US plays a vital portion in the planning of that product.
Fair enough. I want to turn a little bit to the N54, the twin turbo inline six that we've all come to know and love, and the N55, which we saw introduced earlier this year with the 5GT, and it's an engine that I think we're going to have in a lot of vehicles, and currently we're reporting that it's going to be, in fact, in not only the new 3 Series, refresh coming later this year, but also in the sedan and the 1 Series. Confirm or deny that aside, I'm curious, knowing that there's a switch happening to some degree, why the switch? Is it just efficiency?
It's mainly efficiency, that's correct. What you've seen in the past is that BMW, and I go back to engine generations M50, M52, performance is one of our key brand promises. So we establish a performance level. Sometimes we see that we maybe up the ante a little bit more than the competition expected. Right now we seem to have a very clear performance leadership position in the engine compartment, for sure, in that performance layer. Our competitors are not quite there yet, so it's a very good step for us, a very good point in time for us to freeze that or consolidate on that level. The 300 horsepower is a nice number, and increase efficiency. And we've added a lot of technology to the N55, which is in many platforms the replacement motor for the N54. And you will see great efficiency gains with the twin scroll and valvetronic technology.
And also the rumor of 8-speed transmissions, obviously we have that in the 5GT, and a few of the 7 Series models. And also with auto stop-start seemingly coming as well, it seems like that's all sort of married together, yeah, in terms of efficiency.
There's a lot of small measures that all, you know, aggregate that can up to a relatively significant efficiency gain. We have to fulfill CO2 requirements here in the United States too. We have to provide customers with an array of technological features that bring the efficiency of these engines up, consumption down. Auto start-stop that you mentioned is certainly one. If you have a closer spaced but overall longer gearbox, is one. And so we add these 1%, 2% increments to our output because we are very proud of the sustainability and the frugality that our cars can be driven with. What I never cease to mention is, however, that we look for 1% and 2%. We spend a lot of money to find 2 or 3%. Efficiency gains, but the influence of your right foot is about 20. So that's a relatively cheap
but that's efficiency the consumer. Gain. You give them something that can be efficient. If they don't want it to be efficient, that's their problem.
That's the great thing about a free market, yes. That's exactly the way it is.
Well, and speaking of efficiency, there's been some talk from BMW USA about four-cylinder models coming potentially in the future. Yes. What can you tell us about perhaps a timetable or maybe the type of products that we may see?
Well, the four cylinders have been mentioned. They will come and they will likely replace one or several of the six cylinders. It's not going to happen this year, but these are all elements to improve efficiency. Again, direct injection, forced induction engines are a big singular step to help drive efficiencies up. So you can expect them in the near future, but I can't be more specific.
Okay, fair enough. And then, of course, the diesels. We're standing next to two. These are hybrids, obviously, but we're in the efficient dynamics department, if you will, at the Detroit Auto Show. Yeah. And so the diesels are near. What can you tell us about maybe a smaller, more fuel efficient diesel? We know BMW has some wonderful engines outside the U.S. market. Yeah. Should we expect to see one of those in the future?
We've launched a diesel, just to recap, in the U.S. after I think. Two and a half decades for the first time last spring. It was clearly a leap for us. It's a very tall order from the engineering side to make 50 state compliant diesels. All the emission treatment in the exhaust with the AdBlue to fulfill these worldwide strictest emission requirements requires a very dedicated engineering effort that is a big bet, if you will. And so at this stage, we have limited this to only one powertrain application, the M57 top that we have in the 335, and then the diesel and in the X5, X-Drive 35 diesel. And it takes a while to overcome, I think, public perception, and we've done a good job. These products are very convincing. It takes a while to win the dealers' confidence that this is really a winning formula. And now as of late, we see a very, very good customer acceptance and sales result, in particular of the X5. Mm-hmm. And so I would definitely say that we are looking very carefully into expanding our diesel footprint in our U.S. fleet. But the simple answer to take a great four-cylinder that works in Europe and bring it to the United States is not as easy because you have these very U.S.-specific emission thresholds that you have to accomplish. And you can't simply just do that by transplanting an engine, yes.
And obviously you must be really relieved and excited to hear that sales have picked up for specifically the X5 35D. Sounds like you're generally pretty happy with what's happened in the market with the diesels.
Yes, I think what we saw was a relatively ho-hum initial reception. Just if you go back 365 days, we had $2 gallons of fuel. Diesel was more expensive. The press was very critical about the break-even periods, 100,000 miles, a million miles, what all was calculated. It didn't get the reception of open arms. Fuel consumption was the least thing on the mind of American public in the winter 2008, 2009. And then we came into the depth of the crisis and, of course, saw the Cash for Clunkers effort, and all of a sudden there was a public awareness about efficiency and that it's really a good thing to incentivize, mm-hmm. also on the consumer end, to trade something that is not efficient for something that's significantly more efficient. And we immersed ourselves in that dialogue, and I think that has really helped if you look at the sales numbers. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the car was short in supply, was pre-ordered, and that's what we continue to see. The diesel, after only a year, which is not a very long period of time, I would say, looking back, the diesel has made an impact and it has established itself, but it had a typical adoption curve that was a bit more shallow than we would have liked in the beginning.
Sure. Well, and obviously there's the power plant side of being efficient, but there's also the weight. And we know that BMW has talked about reducing weight. We know there's been a lot of work recently with carbon fiber and other lightweight materials, yet we see the new 5 Series come in at actually
heavier than the previous E60 model. When are we going to start to see the fruits of all that labor of weight savings and technology and carbon fiber, aluminum?
We use aluminum, as you know, extensively in our suspensions. We use it in the body. We use enforced plastics in the body. So we actually invest and apply a lot of weight savings technology, but customer demands in terms of technology, in terms of safety from the regulatory side, continue to increase. So they compensate and partly overcompensate for these gains. The weight spiral is not reversed, but it has significantly slowed down. If you look at the weights of the 5 Series over the last preceding 5 generations, and you take any other competing vehicle and you see what has happened there, then you can still say that BMW is doing a remarkably good job in controlling weight. Mm-hmm. When the weight spiral will reverse, it's a difficult answer right now. The materials that allow us to make significant strides in weight are still very expensive, and we need to make sure that if we bring this technology, also make it affordable and attainable for our target group. So that's probably still a little bit out, but we are very aware that intelligent lightweight and overall lightweight are key building blocks on the way to more efficiency. No question.
And last question when it comes to efficiency, Project I, we know we've got the Active E, we've got the Mini E, we had a wonderful show car in Frankfurt. When are we going to start to see the fruits of all of that in a production model? And will that lead to something that we all thought was impossible, front-wheel drive BMW?
Well, I think it's two different questions. But what we've said is we've started to really make field experiments, hand out electric vehicles into consumer hands and multiply the amount of data that we collect in real-life use, because it is something that is new. And we've been out with these cars in the market when others still formulate their plans. The plan for the Project I is to hit the showrooms in the first half of this decade, so we have still a little bit of time left, considering we just started it. And we will dedicate this vehicle to really achieve outstanding efficiency.
Fair enough. So I've got a few reader questions I wanted to go through as well before I get to a couple more that I think you're going to really enjoy. With all the modern technology we see in the X6 and the 7 Series, do you ever get concerned about just too much of it reducing driver involvement in day-to-day?
I think what you see right now is the start of a new technology era. The vehicle that detects its surroundings, I think that you will see cameras being more and more proliferated in the model lineups. It's a very efficient way for the vehicle to detect surroundings 360 degrees, which the driver can never completely achieve, even the best trained driver cannot achieve. And I think everything we can do to help the driver prevent accidents, which we call active safety, is welcome. I think that involvement is a key element of the appeal of our brand, and we want to give you as much as that as possible. And we have that as the primary target in mind when we develop our cars. You can still have a lot of fun in our cars, and if you are in a safe surrounding, let's say on a closed circuit, we also allow you to reduce the level of assistance that the vehicle could provide to you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never experienced that level of. So speaking of that, there's always a middle ground with cars you make. There's cars that you want, there's cars that I want, but then there's cars that the general consumer may want. How do you find that middle ground?
Well, I'm not sure that there is a general consumer. BMW has a market share in the United States of 1.5% or something. So if you look at the overall market, so we are really a niche producer. Overall, in our segment, we are pretty dominant, but that's already a very small sliver of the overall market. Our core promise, and you can see that now repeated on the media wall behind us as well, is joy. So what every BMW has to deliver upon first is a driving experience that is joy. If you ask customers, if you do market research, purchase reasons of the customers, the first unanimous reason always is joy. Fun to drive, handling, power and pickup. So it's always centering around the driving experience. But very few of us, including me for sure, I don't know about you, have the luxury to really afford a vehicle that is solely purposely dedicated on the joy of driving. Probably would make that a single-seater, right? Very light, maybe open wheels, a lot of aerodynamic, and you know, these go for 2 million and you don't race Formula 1 anymore. I'm not sure if you're selling those, but so there's other purposes. And we look very carefully on how the lifestyles of the consumers evolve. And there's, I don't think of the consumers as the consumer. There's a multitude of lifestyles, especially in this market, with in this country, with its freedom. And we try to understand where they are going, what their needs are, and how to cater best to those needs in a package that ultimately always has to deliver on the joy of driving, no matter if that's a Project I, if that is a 1 Series or 7 Series or an X model.
Good answer. So we want to turn to something a little bit more interesting, I think, for our readers as well. We have seen the on the Motorsport website, we've seen the Z4 customer racing car mentioned.
Yeah.
And there's some confusion because obviously the Z4 is a convertible, a roadster. First off, what is that going to be a coupe, essentially fixed roof for the racing community specifically?
Yes, that will be a fixed roof V8 race car. It's a customer race car that basically replaces the outgoing E86 race car that we used to have in the customer program.
And is there going to be any need to produce that for sale on the street to homologize it?
You're looking for your M coupe, huh? Through the back door. There's no plans at this stage to make a street going version of this car. That's really a race car for the GT3 class. Without any bearings or resemblance to anything that we are planning to sell for the road at the current stage.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing it on a racetrack then. It sounds fantastic. We've got a couple other questions around motorsports. Obviously, the Ray Hall Letterman team did pretty well this year. I mean, it was a very full year. They had some ups and downs, but certainly some good results. What can we expect from them in 2010?
Well, 09 was our ingoing season. The competition in the GT class is extremely stiff. There's factory support for our core competitors. Now we have one more than in the beginning of the season. And everyone has a very dedicated and competent engineering force and also racing teams that they're employing. We've seen that our pace is good. We have some baggage that we are have to address. We have a 4-seater and we're fighting against 2-seaters. That gives us a little bit of a downside on drag and top speed. Ultimately, our car is always a little bit more like an automobile among motorcycles, fast on the corners, but maybe not quite as fast on the straightaways. And we need to maximize that attribute of our car to be on pace. I think if you look back at the last season, we had some phenomenal results. When we didn't, we usually were hampered by reliability. So I think everyone excuses you for teething problems in the first season. The expectation for the second season is that the teeth are there,
And this M3 GTS, I've noticed it has a larger engine. Is it safe to think that engine or parts of that car were created with some connection to the Ray Hall Letterman team?
The GT car is a 4-liter, and it competes by and large against 4-liter competitors, and there's no plans to increase the displacement. If you increase the displacement, you have all kinds of other parameters that will hamper you on the performance side. The idea of the racing series is to, an American Le Mans series, is to provide an engineering ground like a sparring, and to stay within a certain paradigm. For us to increase horsepower is, of course, as easy as it is for everyone, and then everyone would do it. So the rules stipulate that you stay with a certain air throughput through the engine. If you make the displacement bigger, you have to work with a different restrictor, and it all sets itself off. You've put a lot of effort in this racing engine, and we will continue to race with this 4-liter layout that's very similar in core construction as what we have in the road car. Mm-hmm. We go, just as a side note, we go road racing in the United States, and we push very hard for this program, even when we're still completely engaged in Formula One, because we believe that is for our core customers. You talk about you and me, enthusiasts. It's important to bring something with the form factor and relevance on the racetrack that they can relate to in terms of what we sell in the showroom. And so I think staying true with the displacement, staying true with engine configuration, were both things that we set this program out to do and will follow.
So the ultimate expression of that, of course, is the M3 GTS, which we know is not coming to the United States, that we know of at least. Is it safe to say that we may see parts of that car or inspiration from that car show up at some point in the U.S. market?
I think the M3 GTS is a one-off. It's not literally one-off. I think there's a very modest sales target for this vehicle. to make it a global vehicle is not possible, also not necessary with the time frame involved. You might see one or several components of this vehicle, but I wouldn't bank on it. The idea of the GTS is increased displacement, very lightweight, semi-race ready track toy. Right? You can use an existing M3 and get very similar results if you intend to do so.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. So it sounds like almost the perfect car then. I mean, you've got plenty of space for luggage because there's no back seats, and it's very lightweight, so it's good with efficiency. And
yeah.
I can't see a downside, really.
Well, $165,000 doesn't stop you, then
there's none.
There's your
downside.
That's the downside. Well, I want to say, obviously, a big thanks to both of you guys for joining us. And Martin, you know, this is something that we've wanted to talk to you for a while about this. And, you know, I think specifically our readers were really excited about this. We've had a lot of reader comments about the manuals and things around, sort of centered around the enthusiast world. So it's certainly good to hear. You know, your opinion, obviously, in person around it.
You guys done a great job on the Cyberworld to collect a very educated and passionate set of our fans and followers and drivers, of course. I think the piece that's on the side about the twin-turbo engine and the X6 and X5M is still one of the best. I use it for internal training because it's so well done, well written, so thanks for that.
Oh, great.
We fully reciprocate the gratitude. So thanks for collecting these people and keep them honest, because their opinion matters to us, because if we don't matter to them, we might as well fold the tent.
I guess we should leave it at that. That's fantastic. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.